for me to even find a gym when I was growing up was very, very difficult. If it wasn't for like elite sport and being on the national team, I probably wouldn't have had access to what I had. And you just want to keep, you know, want to be fit and active. You have to be able to find locations that are accessible for you. And in the app, not only does it give you a library of video exercises that you can do based on your disability and you're in full control, you've also got access to, you know, a explore section that knows kind of every single accessibility, well, the highest accessibility of gyms in the country.
This is the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast, showcasing outstanding startups and initiatives in the global sports tech ecosystem. From Sports Tech X, the leading source for data and insights about sports tech, here is your host, Roan Malhotra.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast. We are continuing our themed approach to our podcast. This year, I've really been enjoying those. And this month for August, our theme is sports tech inclusivity through sports tech and accessibility through sports tech. How sports tech allows differently abled people to access their sport and play the game or watch the game of their choice. And to kick us off, I could not have a more, let's say, I don't know if the word is esteemed, prestigious. It's just a guest that I'm really excited to have on the show. I've got Ali Jawad, who is a four-time Paralympian, including a silver medalist at the, the Rio Games, where he won the silver medal in powerlifting in the 59 kg category. Ali, I could do a longer bio because I was going through your bio, of course, before I got on, and there's so much to say, but I'll first welcome you to the show. Thank you for taking the time.
No, thanks for having me on.
Great, Ali. So, before we jump into the startup that you're here to talk about, which is your company, Accessicize, which allows differently abled people to access fitness and get fitter and access their exercise. Before we get there, which is, by the way, a very cool company and really a nice initiative, I've given a brief about your story as a medal-winning Paralympian, but I want to hear it from your words as well. Tell us a bit about yourself and your journey to setting up this company that you founded.
Yeah, so obviously, I'm a four-time Paralympian. I've been very lucky to compete at kind of the highest levels of sport for 25 years. I had a great career in terms of kind of achieving the dreams that I had as a child. And I guess Accessicize was never really a dream of mine. It kind of came to me in lockdown, in the first COVID lockdown, where I reflected on my career as a disabled person. And I realized very quickly that even though I was lucky to achieve, you know, my fitness goals through elite sport, I realized that the general disability community, you know, didn't have the knowledge that I had. And how can we filter that down? I kind of realized that when I was growing up in gyms, I never asked a question of why I was the only disabled person in the gym. What were the barriers stopping people going? And has that actually changed in 20 years? And the answer is still, it hasn't. So I thought to myself, okay, how do we make fitness that is impairment specific and actually empowers disabled people to exercise on their own terms? So I looked at the fitness app industry and I realized that there are 71,000 fitness apps globally and growing, but none catered for people with disabilities. And I just couldn't believe it. And I thought, right, this has to be done now.
Fair point. And I think that it's weird. We've been having these conversations for a while, pre-COVID and post-COVID. I've recorded a lot of episodes. And the pandemic was a changing, shifting moment and impacted so many people's lives in so many different ways. But there are good things that have come out of it. And this is another classic example, the moment of realization about how I can help my community. So tell us, what exactly does Accessicize do and how does it help differently abled people access their fitness?
Yeah, so we think it's the world's first complete exercise solution for the disability community. And we do that through kind of three main features. One is a unique video library that is disability specific. So every single video in the library is performed by somebody of the user's impairment. So every video is between 20 and 30 seconds long. It's a demonstration of the exercise and the user picks any exercise they want to do, and that creates a training session for them. So the user is in full control of their journey. So it's kind of an educational video library. So we don't provide programs because we feel that the user is an expert on their disability. The other feature is a social hub where, you know, users can share their exercise journeys in the app, and, you know, friends can like and comment, you know, and support them, because I felt that the community element was very, very important. And the last feature, which is probably my personal favorite, is the explore feature, where it allows any user to rate the accessibility of any gym or sporting facility in the local area. That for me is probably the big one, because then it allows the user to understand where there is accessible gyms around the area, but it also gives the gym an accessibility rating, which means that it's public and they get to see it, and hopefully they get to take the, you know, feedback on board and hopefully improve in the future to cater for more disabilities. So yeah, they're kind of the three main features that we think it makes it an all-in-one fitness app.
Makes a lot of sense. So just on the first point, so you said videos for people with different disabilities. So is that purely physical disabilities, or are we talking mental disabilities as well?
Yeah, so at the moment it is physical, but our plan is to expand that invisible illnesses in the future. As you can imagine, we're still a very small company. We've only been around for 2 years, and to create disability content, it is very, very difficult and challenging. That the process takes 3 to 4 months, because you have to make sure everything is as good as it can be. So yeah, we're going to double our content in the next year or so. So we've got 6 impairments in the app. Hopefully by next year we'll have 12. We'll keep doing that until we get to, you know, a number that hopefully caters for as many people as possible.
Perfect. Actually, that was going to be my next question. So what disabilities are covered? You talk about 6 impairments. What are you covering right now?
Yeah, so at the moment we have single leg amputees, single arm amputees. We've got 2 spinal cord impairments, dwarfism and visually impaired.
Okay. Stuff like that. I think, for example, my own mum had a spinal cord impairment. It was actually a surgery gone wrong kind of situation. And this is the kind of stuff that I'm talking about 2012, 2014, that was the period. And she had a physio who would come home every day, and or not every day, but a few times a week or whatever it was. But things like this would have certainly, I know, helped us as a family if we had known better ways to help her, things like that.
Yes, I'm glad you said that, because what the app does as well is that even though it focuses on the user, that library can be accessed by any practitioner to learn the fundamentals of how to adapt different exercises to different impairments so they can cater for their patients. So it's not just for us, I think we've managed to cater for the spectrum of people around the disabled person and not just the disabled person, because I feel like the support network is very important.
Yeah, super important, and great that you're doing that. And I think, which is why we wanted to do this month, is to talk about things like this and the wider impact that it has. We celebrate Paralympians, of course, but there is so much impact that this topic can have on obviously the person concerned, but the families around them, the communities around them as well. All right. So let's talk about maybe the business of the app a little bit. How does it work? Is it a paid subscription thing, or is it free to use? Do you have sponsors? Do you have how does that work?
Yeah, so we've got a freemium-premium model. So you can use the app for free. You can also, it's a subscription model where you can, which unlocks like all the videos and all the features in the app. Eventually, we will probably have a revenue, advertising revenue model as well, where advertisers that are disability-driven get to advertise in the social hub, because we feel like there's so many disability products out there, but they're not housed in one place. You have to scour Google to find, you know, any sort of mobility aids, and that's a long process. So having advertisers that will work with us to hopefully, you know, get their products in front of that community will be quite good. And also, yeah, partnerships. So we're lucky that, you know, we've signed a few partners now and growing that list. There's a huge appetite for this in the fitness industry, so we're kind of pleased.
Perfect. Again, you're setting me up superb, Ali. You're making my job a lot easier because, again, feeding into my next question, which was that, so it sounds like this is a purely consumer-facing app, but maybe there is a B2B element as well. Do you have something that you offer the gyms or other facilities, maybe corporates?
Yeah, so initially we wanted to focus on the user because we felt that that was important, but we realized, I think when we launched that, actually a lot of corporates would want it for their disability employees. So yeah, we've got a B2B model where, you know, corporates can buy licenses into the app and they can give it away to, I guess they could use it as part of their employer benefits for working for that company. And also the gyms, they also get to buy licenses for their personal trainers or the fitness instructors to make sure that, you know, if there's any disabled people that come into the gym, they've got a tool there ready to go to help them.
That makes sense. And because I want to connect that back to the last point you mentioned about the features of the app, which is giving all the gyms around you a disability rating, something that, again, you wouldn't think about. But it's so important and relevant, for, especially when you make that information public. It's a mark for the gym as well. Maybe talk us through a little bit about your own journey of finding how you manage your fitness as a Paralympian. I mean, obviously, you're performing at the highest level. You found a home gym, but you're also probably traveling a lot. You're moving around. How did you solve for that problem before? And how does now Accessorize bridge that gap?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So I guess you can say that I'm quite a privileged disabled person because I've had access to the top facilities that, you know, that money could buy, being at the level that I compete at. So I've been very lucky in terms of accessibility. Now, when I was growing up, that wasn't the case. There were so many gyms where I had to go upstairs. The kind of space between the machines was so narrow, my wheelchair couldn't fit. You had fitness instructors that didn't have a clue about my disability at all. So for me to even find the gym when I was growing up was very, very difficult. If it wasn't for like elite sport and being on the national team, I probably wouldn't have had access to what I had. But if you're not a Paralympian and you don't want to be a Paralympian, and you just want to keep, you know, want to be fit and active, you have to be able to find locations that are accessible for you. And in the app, not only does it give you a library of video exercises that you can do based on your disability and you're in full control, you've also got access to, you know, a explore section that knows kind of every single accessibility, the highest accessibility of gyms in the country, and you can search for them. So it kind of directs people to places of accessibility where they can actually keep fit and active.
And that's super important. I think another thing that COVID or the pandemic taught us is that, yeah, there was a huge growth in like personal fitness and people doing stuff at home and personal fitness devices and stuff like that. But fitness is also a social activity. And there is that experience of going to the gym, saying hi to the person next to you, or just ignoring them completely. Even that can be fun, whatever it is. Do whatever you need to. But just being in a physical space with other people, that cannot be underestimated. And that can, and people with differently abled people cannot be deprived of that, surely.
Yeah, so the gym, what the app does is it allows the user to pick kind of three kind of sub features in the filter section. So you get to have exercises that are home based, gym based, and outdoor based. So we give them a selection. Now, obviously, the dream for me is to get disabled people to integrate into gyms because I feel like for the social aspects is amazing. They can go with their friends and family, and I feel like that for me is the ultimate goal. But we had to start quite slowly here because we know that gyms are not accessible. So we had to make sure we cater for everyone. And hopefully the kind of progression to home-based all the way up to gym-based, you know, is gradual, but also, you know, we make it fun and also educational. So yeah, we've tried to think about kind of all the elements because obviously having lived experience, I realized the process of what disabled people go through to try and exercise.
Yeah, makes sense. Let's situate the app. So you're based in the UK right now. Is it only available in the UK? Are you moving anywhere else?
Yeah, so we've got expansion plans this year to Ukraine, America, and Brazil. We're having discussions at the moment, to kind of expand there, which is very exciting for us. America is obviously the biggest market in the world, 60 million disabled people. Brazil was actually the second biggest with 17 million. For us, the Ukraine is something that we were very passionate about because with the war, you're going to have, you know, more kind of injured, you know, injured soldiers being, you know, disabled. And we're hopefully trying to use that app to kind of help rehab them. Because the app can be used as a rehab tool as well. So we're, yeah, kind of help ensure that, you know, we can do some good as well.
And that's the thing about socially conscious businesses, that when you're in, and you want to find a cause and really support. I mean, not everybody can do everything, but to do your little bit. And businesses that keep this as a top of mind priority usually end up doing a lot more. Which is incredible to hear. All right, Ali, I think you've set the context superbly well. We understand exactly what Accessorize does, what your growth plans are. Can you talk to us maybe about some recent successes and what has been the things that have brought smiles to your face? Maybe you've done an investment round. Maybe you've just seen people use the app. Talk us through that.
Oh, wow. So I think the biggest success for us is actually, the excitement that people are kind of feeling to an app like this. We didn't expect it to be this big this quickly. So we've been invited to loads of like sports industry conferences where we've spoken at. We've been kind of signed partners pretty much straight away. We've had, you know, the fitness industry in terms of the educational PT organizations like wanting to work with us to try and integrate the app into their PT courses, which has never been done before at all. So we're in a position where like people can see the potential. And because we're so small, it's incredible that people are thinking 5-10 years ahead of us, which is, you know, for us, that's what we want. And also we celebrated our second birthday on Saturday. So we've managed to make it to 2. The user feedback has been like incredible. We've obviously got a long way to go to make it as good as it can be, but I feel like with the model that we've got, we can scale it really, really fast to pretty much any country, in a way that, you know, we've done it, initially here, which is a testament to the forward thinking of the team, when we built it in the beginning.
Stay up to date with all things sports tech and sign up for our newsletter. You'll get a monthly breakdown of the most important developments in the global sports tech ecosystem, paired with exclusive interviews with industry leaders. Get all of this and more delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up today at sportstechx.com.
So that's on the successes side. I can imagine that you've also had quite a few hurdles to jump over. Common one, because we obviously have a lot of investors or sports teams on the business side of things who listen to this podcast. What has that experience been like? Whether it's been through fundraising, do you hear no's? And what kind of no's do you hear when you approach people for various, whatever you need?
Yeah, so to give you some context, we've got no technical co-founder at all, which is a problem for, I guess, investors for us. And also, me and my team are not, you know, we're not entrepreneurs, which is like, this is literally the first time doing something like this. So I had to learn very, very quickly how to pitch, what's required in a pitch, what do I have to know. I actually spent the whole of lockdown looking at Shark Tank and Dragon's Den episodes to understand what questions are going to be thrown at me, which is funny.
Those help, by the way.
Yeah, they do.
No jokes. They really help. I mean, there's entertainment, but those shows are very teachable moments for entrepreneurs.
They are. I obviously use YouTube to kind of understand what I was getting myself in for. And I think when we pitched to... So we're going through a funding round at the moment. And nobody's said it's a bad idea. In fact, they're blown away by it. But an idea is an idea without the execution. And I think to a lot of investors, the disability fitness market does not exist. It doesn't. There's no data. A lot of the fitness apps out there, a lot of them exist and cater for, you know, kind of non-disabled people. There's so many options there. There's so much data there. But for the disability fitness like data, there's nothing. So how do you prove to an investor, one, there's a market, two, that you're capable of pulling it off without a technical co-founder. Three, like that we had to be able to demonstrate if there's even any appetite for it. There's a lot of social disability data, but nothing in fitness. So I think my viewpoint is that markets had to start from somewhere. Markets were created by someone that had an idea that when markets didn't exist. So this is just another one where, you know, there's 1.2 billion disabled people globally. It's 20% of the global population, and they've got no access to an exercise solution that's based on their disability. That's a pretty big minority market. In fact, it's the biggest in the world when it comes to minority. So, you know, a lot of investors seem to, because they're not disabled themselves, they seem to kind of use the mainstream model, which you can't use for disability. A disability market is completely different and probably needs to be seen in a different way in terms of how to fund it. And that's what I keep saying to investors. Don't use us in a way where you compare us to the mainstream market. Disability is completely different. It has to be seen a different way.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, that the idea of how you pitch, because of course every founder, especially when they're doing it their first time, it is a very steep learning curve. And you get a lot of either the pat on the back and, you know, fantastic job, but maybe not for us, or you just get the straight up no. And then you learn from that and learn how to pitch and how to adapt your pitch. And already sounds like you've learned a lot in terms of understanding that, hey, this is not your traditional VC use case. This is a different type of business. We're going to approach it differently. And that's a huge learning to pass on to another founder.
I think for me, I challenge VCs and go, look, how many disability tech companies do you have in your portfolio? And actually, are you serious about accessibility? Because if you're not, then what's the point of having this conversation? And when they say they've got none on their portfolio, I'm like, well, this is your chance to, one, you know, have a disability-focused company under it, but also you've got the potential to help us grow it and make it as big as it can be. So I want VCs to kind of see the potential rather than, oh, you know, we're going to try and see it as a mainstream startup.
Yeah. Yeah, there's an opportunity to make effect change. And at the same time, maybe not execute 10x or 20x of your investment, but these are still good businesses. As you said, there is a market for them.
Well, I don't know if you've seen the stat, but for every £1 you invest in disability, you get £9 back. So actually,
is a 9x, 10x business there.
Exactly. So it's called we call it the purple pound in the UK. So okay. If you kind of take care of disabled people and give them access to products like this, they'll be loyal because they know that you're doing something good for them. And VCs don't see it because they haven't got anybody in their team that's disability minded. And I think that's where they're going wrong.
Makes a lot of sense. Well, Ali, hopefully you'll be that founder that breaks through those barriers. As always, with somebody breaking through barriers, you end up with bloody noses. but that's part of it. And I can't imagine that's something that you haven't dealt with before. All right, so we've covered some of the successes, we've covered some of the challenges. I want to talk about your own journey and in the context of the startup. What have been, because we've had professional athletes, I've been very fortunate to talk to NFL pros and tennis stars, people from playing professionally in different sports, but I've never had a Paralympian on the show, which is an honor for me. What have been some of the learnings that took you through your career as a professional athlete that have translated in the best way to your life now as an entrepreneur?
I think there's loads of things that is transferable. So, you know, organization, I'm very organized. I think for us as athletes, we're used to dealing with adversity and adapting pretty much straight away. We have to work under, you know, high pressured situations on a daily basis. And in a startup world, anything can change on you know, weekly. You have to make hard decisions. You have to be very critical. You have to be able to kind of appreciate the wins, but also know that actually them wins are quite rare. And actually you're going to be hearing a lot of no's and it can't be done a lot. And also you get questioned about your capability of actually executing the plan. And also as athletes, we love proving people wrong. And also working, you know, as part of an incredible team that has got a vision to, you know, really do something quite incredible that's never been done. I've been lucky that I've got all the kind of tools that I learned as an athlete and I can transfer it. I think for me, it's the kind of the startup corporate world has been quite difficult for me to navigate because the communication levels are not that high compared to elite athlete, being an elite athlete. So I actually struggle with the I guess the slowness of people's replies. Yeah, so I might have to get used to it.
Or the slowness and perhaps even the indirectness.
Indirectness, really yeah.
Coming at you and yeah, exactly. Kind of just skirting around things.
Yeah.
Fair point. Yeah, I think my favorite part of what you said is, and this is something that I've realized as I'm now working in sports for not super long. My own journey was as an entrepreneur. I shifted into sports tech after I exited my last company in 2017. So been consuming sports since forever. But to understand the business mindset from a different way. And one of the things that I realized most was that the athletes consciously acknowledge that we lose a lot more than we win. As you said, those wins are rare. And that resonates with any founder because you hear a lot more no's than you will yeses. So there's a lot more failure, which can become teachable moments than successes. So you take away a lot from the successes as well, while those failures are the ones that actually drive your day-to-day. I think that's a tremendous learning for anybody to take away. Maybe a quick one here. What was the best piece of advice that you were given, either coming up as an athlete or maybe as a founder now?
Oh, wow. So I think as an athlete, it's I think you should leave your ego at the door. Mm-hmm. Regardless of what you think or how good you think you are, you shouldn't be the smartest person in the room. Actually, you should be the dumbest person in the room, because in a startup, you need people to help you scale it, but people that are more intelligent than you are. And your job is to empower them, allow them to take risks, allow them to fail, but also, you know, allow them to thrive. Your job is to kind of guide them rather than thinking you know it all. You'll never know it all. And I think for me, it's hopefully building a team that understands that their ego needs to be left at the door and it has to be for the greater good rather than themselves.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. But the one thing I add to that is that doesn't mean that losing your ego doesn't mean losing your confidence.
No.
Because you walk in that room with your head up, with the shoulders back, and you know that you belong there, but you're still eyes open, ears open as well.
Yeah, I always kind of encourage people to be curious. Ask those questions. Because if you ask those questions, actually people will probably like you for it, because you know they know that you want to learn. And you don't know everything. So yeah, obviously you like leave your ego at the door, but always be curious.
Makes sense. Ali, all right. So what's next? What's coming up for Accessercise? What you said you've got a funding round open right now. Maybe you want to talk about that a little bit, or any exciting projects that you're working on where you're inviting collaborators, anybody who's listening that can reach out.
Yeah. So at the moment we are going through our funding round. Hopefully we can close that this year. And we're obviously looking for, you know, either angel investors that are kind of socially impact driven, or VCs that see an opportunity in this market and actually want to help us grow it. And I think, for us, what's next is we're going to keep adding disabilities into the app, hopefully improving the functionality of it, the UI, making sure that, you know, we make it as accessible as possible. And hopefully, I think, in 2 months, I think we're announcing a world exclusive. So watch out for it. So we've been working very hard kind of behind the scenes to get it over the line. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, a little teaser there. Ali, you're a marketing guy as well.
I've learned.
You had to. Just up to how things have gone till now, because on the investment thing, because obviously there's a lot of work, especially when you're creating video content and the kind of video content that you're doing, there's a lot of work, time, and money that goes into that. How have you been doing it so far? Have you raised money before, or is this just self-funded?
No. So initially, as what athletes do, they always go all in. So it was founder funded first. And then I think one angel investor, and then we got money from an accelerator. So we've managed to achieve what we've done on hardly any outside funding yet. So imagine the kind of potential when, you know, we do get the outside funding in, we can scale at probably a quicker rate and produce something that could be pretty special.
Which accelerator did you come out of?
The Remarkable Tech Accelerator. It's based in Australia. They're disability driven. All the startups are based on, like, accessibility and the disability community. And even though I obviously grew up disabled, I learned so much in terms of, you know, how to actually make our product way even better. It was good to be on there and also meeting other, you know, disability tech founders. So that was great.
Sounds like an incredible experience. All right, Ali, man, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I could pull your ear for much longer, but we do try to keep it within half an hour. I'm going to give you my last question before we sign off, which is usually my favorite question to ask. I like to believe that all sports fans first, and given that we choose to work in this industry, but with you having been to 4 Olympics, I can only imagine what this would be. But what has been your favorite sporting moment? Either one that you participated as an athlete, which I'm going to guess I have an answer for, but also one as a fan. Maybe there's something that you experienced that you'd like to share.
Oh, okay. I think winning the silver medal at the Paralympic Games in Rio was obviously the highlight, because I've dreamt that since I was six. But for me, I think the highlight as a fan is I'm a big Liverpool fan. And us winning the Premier League was a lifetime of dreams for me. So when we won it during COVID, actually, I can't really beat that moment because we've not done it since.
Yeah, I did spot the little Liverpool.
Behind
you. Yes, we'll still get along, Ali. I'm a United fan. I've always been.
Okay.
So, yeah, but we can still be friends.
I'll let you off.
Ali's being humble, by the way. He's won the silver at the Paralympic Games in Rio in 2016, but he's also won a lot more. Quickly going through it, he won the gold in the IPC Powerlifting European Championships in Hungary in 2015, won the IPC Powerlifting Championships in 2014 in Dubai, won gold there as well, and the bronze in the same one in 2013 in Russia. So he's familiar with the podium, but of course, the Olympics, I can imagine, was an incredible one. Do you have a favorite of the four that you... And by the way, Tokyo as well was a pandemic in the Olympics and must have been crazy. But do you have a favorite out of the four? I mean, the medal aside, as an experience overall?
Well, I think, you know, London 2012, obviously London is my home city, right. To compete in front of a packed arena of friends and family cheering for you. You're not going to beat that in terms of, you know, the home advantage. And obviously... You know, Rio was where I achieved my childhood dreams, but also Rio is very beautiful as well. So it was an incredible, you know, 3 weeks out there, and coming back as a medalist was incredible. But yeah, I think London 2012 also does rival it in terms of just having people watch me there.
Yeah, that was a pretty good games. And also the ceremonies, the opening and the closing were quite fun. London put on a good show for sure. Ali, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for making the time. It's been great chatting with you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Pleasure.
All right, guys, that is a wrap for the first episode in our series of Sports Tech for the Differently Abled, how accessibility and inclusivity can be achieved through Sports Tech. Accessisize is the company that we covered on today's show. Go check that out and go check out Ali as well. We'll drop his contact details in the show notes if you want to reach out. We have a good lineup of guests coming up for the rest of the month, so stay tuned. See you guys then.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast with Roan Malhotra. If you like our show, let us know and leave a review. And if you want to know more about us, check out sportstechx.com, where you can find our latest industry reports and updates. For a deeper dive into all things sports tech, check out our comprehensive database, SportsTechDB, at sportstechdb.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media. You can find us at SportsTechX on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Join us next time for another insightful conversation with a leader in sports tech.